Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, presented by Stuart Elford, recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Hello there, I'm Stuart Elford, CEO of Devon Chamber of Commerce, with another edition of our In Conversation With podcast, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, and recorded here at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth. I'm joined by two guests today, and this came out of me being lucky enough to attend an event a month ago at Methodist Central Hall in Plymouth for the charity Gifted Women. And today I'm joined by two guests from Gifted Women, Jenny Ajene, who's the founder, and Raina Dunn, who gave an incredible presentation and made all of us cry. Thanks for that, Raina. So I think just to start, perhaps Jenny, can you tell us about how Gifted Women came about?
Yes, thank you. Lovely to be here. Gifted Women came about from me running my own business for many, many years. It was a printing business. And during COVID, I had a bit of an epiphany, as many of us did. Some people left their jobs and moved to the countryside. Yeah. Some people built a garden house and I started a charity.
As you do. Yeah.
As you do, I know. Yeah, I had this really steady business and then COVID came around and all of the staff were furloughed and the customers disappeared for a fair while. And I just thought, what am I doing? I'm really drifting here. You know, I was really in that sort of survival mode of raising children, running a business, employing people, just the daily grind, really. Mm. And actually that chance to just sit and think and have a bit of time really led to a lot of deep thinking and a reconnection with my previous career where I worked with young people in the criminal justice system. And I was thinking, where's that person gone? He used to be so passionate about that. Yeah. You know, I've just really drifted here. But at the same time, I didn't want to lose the business. It was fairly profitable. It was steady. We'd built it up for about 8 years or more. And so I thought, okay, I'll turn the business into something good, you know, something purposeful. And I'll start an employment program employing women in recovery from addiction or women who've recently left the criminal justice system, that kind of thing. Long story short, it was really life-changing, changed women's lives, changed my life. And I just thought there needs to be more of this. You know, I want more businesses to be able to do this. And I want more women to be able to get jobs, but I can't give any more jobs. So I thought there's a little gap here for this work in Plymouth. And that's how Gifted Women came about, really.
Wow.
Well, is that brave. A bit longer than you were expecting?
No, that is, not at all. We're here to hear from you, not from me. You know, nobody wants to listen to me waffle on. I'm inspired. So you piloted it in your own business in some ways and then launched it as a charity. And you, how does Gifted Women tackle deep-rooted trauma and the systemic inequalities that many of the women you support face?
Gifted Women exists for women overcoming multiple disadvantage, which is a combination of problematic substance use, homelessness, and contact with the criminal justice system. And 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, that's rooted in trauma and abuse. Mm. And that's a cycle that runs very deep, often generations, decades, years. The first thing I think is just acknowledging that actually journeying into work is a really long process. It's not going to be an overnight thing. It's not a case of just give somebody a job. There's this deep hearts and minds work to it as well, where women have to actually believe they're worthy of working and that people would want to employ them and that they know what they have to offer. So Gifted Women is a very gentle baby steps process. Lots of focus on community, lots of group work, lots of one-to-one support, work experience placements in local businesses, baby steps towards getting into paid work and then actually sustaining it. Because you could give somebody a job off the street and that might be with the best of intentions, but it's too complicated.
They need all the support around that.
They need a solid foundation.
And you mentioned community. How do you foster that sense of community amongst the women?
Well, we place a really big emphasis on joy. I think a lot of services are very up against it and there's not a lot of time or resource for that. No. And I guess that's the beauty of founding a charity is that you can design things exactly how you want them. And for me, joy is really important. Actually having fun, laughing, doing things just because you can, really. Getting out of that survival mode and just living, really. I think that's it. And that's how we do community. So it could be any range of activities that we do in our Monday drop-in groups. It might be trips to the beach. It might be silent discos that we have once in a while. Yeah.
So I've heard of a silent disco. Is this where you wear headphones and you dance along?
You've got to come to our next one.
People do not want to see this bloke dance. That would be, I think, from that line from Four Weddings and a Funeral, you know, see him dance, he feared lives may be lost. You know, it was kind of like arms and legs flying about everywhere. So just to go back a step, I asked you about the systemic inequalities and what have you. Does the charity, you're dealing with effect, you're not dealing with cause, you don't tackle the causes of how people have come there. You're dealing with the aftermath of this trauma, is that right?
Yes, I would say it's not quite as black and white as that, because really it's a huge tangle. Yeah. And once you start pulling a thread, the whole thing. Yeah. So there's a lot of trauma and it's deep rooted. But what our position is that we do focus on the future. So we're not counsellors. We're not trained to address issues such as trauma head on. We wouldn't really go there. Gifted Women works really well when women also have access to other services. So it might be Sunflower Centre in Plymouth, or it might be Harbour Drug and Alcohol Service, or even Probation Service. So there is a solid foundation that has to be built, and that's not always a one-stop shop. So women might get that brick by brick, really. They would build that.
So what's your sort of long-term vision for Gifted Women? Where do you see it going, and how do you get others involved?
Really, I think it's focused on this local area at this point, and that is very intentional. Yes, there's other cities where there's other women who experience the same challenges, but I think where we can have real impact is when we build a really tight-knit community of employers, women, services who refer in, and I think just building on what we've already created here in Plymouth so that employers would know about Gifted Women, businesses would know what we do, would actually approach us for recruitment because they see the value in employing people who have been through incredibly tough life experiences and come out the other side resilient and full of spirit and full loyal. Of absolutely loyal and full of dedication and a real fire in them that, you know, when you work with a woman from Gifted Women or when you employ her, it's not going to be just a job to her. My vision is for a city where that's really understood and utilised, and we can see women taking back their power and actually leaving those cycles in the past. So the addictions, the prison, that cycle, homelessness. Yeah, my vision is just that Gifted Women would be able to help as many women as possible to break that sustainably for good.
So a little side question. I suppose everyone has inbuilt prejudice, don't they? It's unconscious bias that we don't know we've got. And you're talking about women that conjures up an image. I know a lot of people who don't have sympathy with people who are alcoholic or who've abused drugs or have turned to prostitution. They feel like everyone has a choice. And I suppose employers would also potentially come with this idea of, oh, well, they're going to be a difficult employee because of that. Yeah. So how does that resonate with you? Is that what you find?
Absolutely. I explained who we exist for. It's women in that sort of cycle. And we do quite often get inquiries from other services, or we have a woman and she's experienced domestic abuse. Could she come on the programme? And we really do stick to our niche. It is that multiple disadvantage, because if we stray away from that, the stigma and the judgment creeps in, and we could end up with another service where the actual women who we created Gifted Women for are locked out because they can't come out of prison and rock up to a group and say, I'm here, I don't know what I've got to offer, but I'm going to give it a go. It wouldn't feel like a safe space for them, because Gifted Women has to be for those women, because no other spaces are in terms of employability. And other services, which might be fine for me if I needed a job, because I have a certain degree of privileges, many privileges, in fact. Other services might be, if you don't come to this appointment, you don't come to the next one. That's it. You know, you've lost the chance. We understand it's a gradual process. It's a slow burn. It's that hearts and minds work. So that's why we do stay very true to that niche, and just to protect that opportunity for women who otherwise become just excluded through stigma, through judgment. As you say, society labels people as worthless or a waste of space or people who've made the wrong choices. And actually, when you scratch the surface, you realise that actually, right from childhood, often they didn't have any other choices. What might seem like a choice was never a choice. It's survival.
It's funny you should mention that. And I'm going to come to Raina in a moment because I know you've got an incredible story that will explain a lot of this. But I remember I did many years in the police service and I can remember going to two jobs, one after the other. And the first one was this serial criminal hooligan living in North Prospect who was a one-person crime wave, without a doubt. I mean, they were just causing mayhem.
Yeah.
You know, there was just about anything that happened in their street was down to this young person. And as we left, policeman that I was serving with, throwaway comment, but he said, cool, one bullet, 27 pence for a bullet, and think of all the problems you'd get rid of. That was a throwaway comment. He didn't mean it, but it was just a throwaway comment. The next job we went to was a very deprived area of Plymouth. We went into this flat. There was dog excrement all over the floor. The mum's an alcoholic and a drug abuser. The kids are running around naked. And as we left, the same policeman said, that poor little kid, he doesn't stand a chance, does he? He's our criminal of tomorrow. And my epiphany moment was thinking, at what point does he stop being the poor little kid who doesn't stand a chance, whose destiny's mapped out for him? And at what point does he start being the hooligan that deserves a bullet? And if the criminal justice system and society was perfect and gave everybody a perfect chance, you could get to a point where people deserve what happens to them. But it isn't perfect and people don't have a chance. And that was my real epiphany moment where I started being much less judgmental about people and the circumstances they've got themselves into. I think the expression is, we are all two or three coincidences away from being on the street.
Yeah.
You know, we think we're all safe and secure in our houses and what have you, but your partner could leave you, you could lose your job, you could get divorced or whatever, and suddenly you've got no income. It's really tough, isn't it?
The conversation continues shortly. But first, Stuart Elford and the Chamber of Secrets.
Hello and welcome to the section of the show where we ask one of our guests from our podcast series to answer a question that's been submitted by our chamber members, and there's a whole load of them in a container in front of us. And my guest who's going to pull a question out of the Chamber of Secrets, my guest Shreya Cullingall, is going to very kindly open the chamber box, pull out a question.
What is your favourite book? Oh, this is just too hard. Okay. My most favourite book that I've read this year, that's probably easier for me, probably this book called Before the Coffee Gets Cold. I can't remember the author's name. It's a Japanese author. It's been translated to English, but it's based on a cafe in Japan where it's a magical cafe where you can drink a cup of coffee and go back to the past. There's all these rules around how long you can stay in the past, etc. But the main rule is you have to return from the past before the coffee gets cold. And it's many different people's experiences being at this cafe, who they choose to go back to, meet, and why. And it's just a very, very interesting question about what purpose is served in revisiting the past. And it's a fantastic book.
I think I'm going to read that. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining me in my Chamber of Secrets, Shreya Cullingall.
Thank you.
Follow Devon Chamber on X at chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about me, but that really resonated with me, that sudden understanding of people are in situations that map out a lot of what they've done. So I've got a lot of admiration for people like Raina, because you had a slightly interesting start to your life, didn't you? And I wonder if you could tell us a bit about your background and where you found yourself and how you got there.
I grew up, like you said, people on drugs and alcohol. So my mum was a really bad alcoholic and drug addict. She usually went in really bad domestic violence relationships. She was with men that sold drugs. So it was a lot of violence that was normal. But her thing was she was abused when she was a child, but it just never got dealt with. Like the parents shoved under the carpet and was like, we're not going to embarrass the family and talk about it. So I felt like her abuse was ignored and not acknowledged. And she grew up thinking probably that she wasn't worthy of being listened to, or maybe her pain wasn't acknowledged by her parents. And I think she just was broken from that. And she took drugs a lot and drink a lot. And she was in a lot of violent relationships and bad relationships. So I grew up like that, trying to help her. And like you said, when do you feel sorry for the kid that becomes a criminal? Because I started having to do things to pay for my mum's drug bills. I'd never done a burglary in my life, but all I knew was men were coming to hurt my mum, and if I didn't have enough money, that they were going to hurt her in front of me. So I just knew that I could break into a house, maybe rob things. So I started off doing stuff like that. but I was always desensitized to violence because I'd seen so much of it. Mm. And I was always trying to protect my mum, always fighting men for her, with her. And then I started becoming angry. And then I started doing more things, you know, hang around with people that are in that life. I didn't want to be a horrible person. I didn't wake up and go, oh, I'm going to love doing this stuff today, you know. It was just like these situations just are in front of you and there's no control. You've got no control over anything.
It was inevitable in some ways. It was going to happen because of your environment.
Yeah.
There was no way out. That was where you were. This is what you saw.
Yeah. And I always knew that it'd be something major that had to happen to stop the snowball from rolling down the hill. I just didn't know what it would be. Either I would have been dead, my mum would have been dead, or what I did, my crime, it ended up having to be that way. But I was damaged inside from seeing so many men hit and abuse and rape that I'd just become so angry at just even seeing men. Mm. They just brought up a lot of things for me, and I became so protective of women because of my mum. Mm. So anytime I saw women being hurt or felt that I needed to protect someone, I jumped into that role. And I believed I was doing the right thing. Mm. With all my heart, I believed it. So it shows you how you can be brought up one way and believe that what you're doing is normal and right.
How did that show itself? How were you defending them? Is that what led you going to prison?
Yeah, I was very protective. Whenever my mum would be drunk or high or fight with men, I'd always be jumping in and trying to protect her or trying to help her. It's hard to describe. It's just things you see in movies, though, stabbing people and hurting people, using weapons. That's normal. My mum was stabbed in front of me once and they told me they wouldn't get involved because it was domestic violence. They weren't allowed to get involved. Mm. And I said, he's just stabbed my mum and he hit me in the face with an iron. My lip was bleeding. Mm. And they just basically left us. They said, we can't get involved in domestic disputes.
That's outrageous.
And
outrageous.
They left me in that house. Yeah. And I had to kick the bathroom door down because one of them was injecting my mum in the neck with heroin. And I hated that. She was on heroin, but I hated her for it. I hated that he'd introduced it. It
and
was
that
drugs.
Hate and rage showed itself
yes.
in violence.
I started getting angry, resentful towards my life. You know, I just wanted someone to come and pick me up and say, come on, let's go. But I had to stay because I had sisters. I was the oldest of three sisters. So I was trying to protect them all the time. But thankfully, in the end, they got taken into care. But once they got taken, I lost that link to my humanity. They were my humanity. They kept me being
a provider, a carer, yeah.
Instead of turning into this cold person that had to be cold. If you got put in the army, you go across these war zones, you harden yourself because you have to survive in that environment, right? You adjust. I think that so many layers of armor I put on myself to try and survive in that environment of that horrible stuff. My house became a drug den. There was my sister's rooms where they used to stay, then became a mattress on the floor. And I went up there once and there was a little girl left in that room from some people that smoked drugs that were using the room to do their drugs. They'd left their kid there and she just put her little hands up to me, you know, to pick her up. Oh, it's horrible what you see in that life.
So what was the pivotal moment for you? You went to prison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that saved me.
Did it?
Yeah, and I'm sorry that someone else had to suffer for me to get out of that situation. And I can't take that back. But that's why I do what I do now, you know, because I think everyone who paid for me and my anger, I need them to know that I'm sorry.
What do you feel about the victim? Do you mind talking about it?
Obviously, I don't agree with what he did to the girl, because it was a man that was beating up his girlfriend, partner at the time. Mm. But he was locking her in a house. Mm. She was pregnant as well. And she was only 17. And she was scared of him. She's not allowed out. And my sister had just been taken. I had a lot of anger. I was already angry already. And I just thought, I can't live like this anymore. I was selling heroin and crack from 12 years old to make money for my mum. I was out on the streets being robbed by big people. I was only little. I was kind of small now, but I was smaller then at 12, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was out there with these big drugs in my mouth, selling to people all day just because so I could go back and had enough money to buy food, gas or whatever needed to be put on. I felt a lot of responsibility quite young. And then that night after they got taken, I felt, what was the point of my life? Mm. And obviously I wanted to stay for my mum because they did try and take me into care, but I'd always run back to my mum because I'd never leave my mum. Mm. And in the end, when I just saw this guy start to attack her that night and I ended up doing what I did stab the man. But I carried a knife because I was selling drugs for protection. Not that that's an excuse at all. No, no, I mean, no. I was carrying a knife at the time. And it just something in me. He became every man that had ever hit my mum. He became every man that had raped my mum. He became every man that had hurt someone that I cared about. And it all went on him.
All that anger exploded out of you. So what was the pivotal moment in prison where you decided it's time to turn your life around?
I think when my mum died, because she died 2 years into my sentence, and I felt like I wasted the last years I could have had with her. And I thought, wow, I missed all that time and I don't want her watching me thinking I'm a failure. So I just thought, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I've got to try and do something with my life, try and be something. It can't be all for nothing.
And how did you turn your life around? What did you do? What steps did you take and how were you supported?
I did a lot of education. I did apply for funding. I tried to start a degree. I did a couple of years in social sciences. I read books and I loved reading and learning. And that's what prison gave me, this love of knowledge and learning and thinking, wow, like I just wanted to take all this in and just become better. So I applied for funding. I did all loads of different courses. I worked with young girls that came into the prison and used the story to try and stop them from doing the same things, because there's girls out there doing the same thing right now. And I just want to be that voice that wasn't there for people like me.
And they probably respect you more because you've lived it. You're not preaching to them. You're
That's
not
it. That's
coming
what
from
I feel,
a place
yeah.
of authority saying
exactly.
you must or you mustn't or I know. You,
exactly.
You're sharing your experience and saying, this is me, and turn it around now.
Yeah, that's it. And I don't believe prisons work.
Well, I was about to say it worked for you in some ways and your story heartens
but
me.
But
really.
I did a long time and not everyone gets the access to that length of sentence. I mean, it's sad to say I had to do that long to get access to support, but
right.
There's courses that you'll be waiting years for. Some people don't ever get access to. And there's people outside that are in this middle ground where they don't want to be doing really bad crime because they're just dipping their toe in and they want to get out, but they're not getting the support. But then they're saying, but if I do this crime and go to prison, I'll get this help. This is how people are talking.
Yeah, that's madness, isn't it? Yeah.
But then when we go to prison, you get another 5 different barriers put on top of you that you have to overcome just to even get out and be on the same level as everyone else. Like, imagine going to prison, they're saying, right, you've done this crime, now go to prison and change your life. Okay, then you're in prison, which is a traumatic place. I'm lucky that I lived the life I lived because it hardened me for some stuff. But not every woman is built that way.
No.
And when you're seeing women cutting themselves, being bullied for money and tobacco in there, and people prey on you if you're not strong enough, and just even seeing women cutting themselves, coming out on the landing and hanging themselves, you know, this stuff's traumatic. How are you meant to change your life in that environment? Please explain to me.
No, I don't know. I mean, as I was saying earlier, the system's not perfect by a long, long, long way.
I'm not saying that all jails had no effect, because I did therapy, which helped me. I did therapy for 4 years, though, and that was every day. But I think charities like Gifted Women that actually make a difference, that actually do care, don't just say, oh, we only got funding for like a few years and then we don't know, you're just going to go off and... Do you know what I mean? That's what usually happens with charities. They'll be there to support you for a certain amount of time. But then you have to go, and then it's like, what do you do then? It's like a family, and it gives you more than just... work skills, and it gives you a lot of other things as well.
So when did you first come across the charity? How did you guys meet and what did it do for you?
Probation introduced me, didn't they?
Via Women's Centre Cornwall, wasn't
it? Yeah.
So I was actually working at a women's centre last year and you were referred in. And then as soon as I met you, I thought, we got to get Raina on Gifted Women.
Yeah. I was a bit shy at first. I was like, because I hadn't really put myself out there. But as soon as I'd done it, I just felt no judgment. No one even made me feel like it's just because I was a failure. They just focused on moving forward, focused on positivity, focused on not sitting down and going through everything, what you've done in your past. But where do you want to be now? How are we going to get you there? What the steps are going to need to take? And they support you, really support you, like not just say it. And it's a family as well. It's a group. When women come together, we support each other. It's such a strong thing to build something on. Women, we've been underdogs for years, haven't we, to men? But now it's starting to come a bit better, I fully accept that. But we've had to always struggle, women. And I feel like when women come together, we've always been there for each other. I mean, in history, women coming together is a really powerful thing. And I think the way they support each other and come together as a family really gave me the right environment where I was able to unpeel the layers of hardness that I'd put around myself and get to know who I was underneath. And that's what they did for me.
The conversation continues shortly, but first, the 60-second charity pitch.
Hi, I'm Tanya Woodland. I'm the CEO at Jeremiah's Journey. Jeremiah's Journey supports children, young people and their families across Plymouth and the surrounding area after the death of someone special. We support around 350 individual children and young people a year with wider beneficiaries of 2,000. And we support them through structured group therapy programmes, through memory days, through individual work, through family therapy. And throughout the time at Jeremiah's Journey, we help them to understand the grief that they're going through, to understand that grief journey, and to help them be able to get over a significant bereavement and look forward with hope. We'd be delighted to hear from anybody that thinks they can help us in any way, and especially somebody that might have been bereaved as a child themselves, because ultimately you're the best advocates for the work that we do.
Follow Devon Chamber on X at @Chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
Well, you don't seem hard now.
No, everyone
which
says
is lovely.
That.
Just to let you into a secret, Stuart. She's such a softie.
She's such a softie.
You know, don't tell them.
A lot of people who are aggressive, I think, are soft inside, and there's a reason. There's the defence thing.
It's the reason why people are the way they are, isn't it?
But you use your voice now through a number of ways, don't you? Through radio, through theatre, to tell your story and change things. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I started the radio show, Women Unlocked, which is where I get to interview different women and give them their space to tell their stories. I'm still learning the tech and stuff because I've never done anything. I just went, right, I'm doing a radio show now. No, Jenny hooked me up, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I never thought I'd even be able to do anything like that. So being given the opportunity and then actually doing it, it's crazy. It's amazing. Yeah, so I do that every Thursday from 3 till 4.
Where can people listen to that?
It's P-Town Radio.
P-Town, yeah, okay.
But you can listen live if you go online. But I usually put something up on LinkedIn as well and let everyone know what's coming up.
We're going to get the recordings online as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
Good. Some great, powerful stories. I mean, the event you held at Methodist Central Hall, I just heard some incredible stories. Like I say, made a few of us... Well, it was a bit misty in there, I think. Someone was cooking onions or something. very, very powerful. And you use theatre as well, Raina?
I have done theatre work. Well, writing stuff, stories and poems sometimes. I want to use theatre as a way to tell stories. I want to use theatre as a way to open up to an audience that might not have ever been able to see or hear things like that. Because when you think of theatre, you think of rich people, right? Well, you probably don't, but I do. I've grown up, everyone just knows theatre, that's for rich people. I want it to be opened up to everybody, and I want it to be used as a tool to tell stories because I think it's so powerful.
Mm.
And it's a way to show people that might not have never lived that life just a little insight into the reality of it.
I need to connect you with James Mackenzie Blackman from the Theatre Royal. He's the CEO. He's really passionate about reaching out with theatre.
Yeah, definitely.
He's very aware that theatre shouldn't be in a building that's expensive to get into. He wants to reach out, so I'll put you in touch there. If you could change one aspect of the criminal justice system then, what would it be? What's the biggest failure point? What would you do, the both of you, this is to both of you, you know, what would you do? What could you change? Because it does seem that in some ways, Raina, I mean, I can't use the word lucky relating to you, but you've described yourself as lucky that you had a long enough sentence to get the support, that you've met the right people.
Yeah.
What's the biggest failure in the system at the moment?
The system itself. Because you're locking people away. You think that locking up a problem is just going to fix it because it gets released again 6 months, a year, whatever.
Mm.
You don't lock away a problem and it's fixed automatically, is it? You just let it out a little bit later on and it's still the same. And you're wasting all that money by locking these people in and just traumatising them even worse. Some people go there and get in addiction, which they never did before, because there's no escapism. There's no way for them to escape in there. So they just like, I'm just going to take whatever someone gives me. Because there's this horrible place. When we do wrong, we need to be punished. And I fully understand that. I'm not saying to not be punished, but I'm saying if you want the problem fixed on a longer term, does it matter to you more whether the person's punished, or does it matter more to you whether the problem's solved for good? Because I'd rather the problem be fixed for good.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I'm not sure punishment helps a lot of people.
No.
I think there needs to be support to change.
They spent their lives being punished. Like, yeah. These people are women that have been abused. These are women that have been in long-term domestic violence relationships. The majority of the women I met, they ended up being in relationships for like years, 20, 30 years, and they've been beaten every day. And then this one day they were like slapped and they end up killing the guy. Mm. And this is the majority of women. Or they're in there because they've been battered for the majority of the time and they've hurt the person, or they were on drugs. I'm not saying it's all men. I'm fully not saying that. I'm just saying there's a lot of trauma that comes with women and relationships, and the criminal justice is a lot of links, you know, to a traumatic past. And I just think that putting them in a traumatic place after they've just spent their whole lives just trying to get through their life, now go in jail and try and change your life. All right, then.
It's a lot of change needed, isn't it? I mean, you were incredibly self-motivated, actually, by the sound of it, but not everyone can do that. They need that step on the way. So what message would you share with young women who are facing similar problems to you faced? What challenges you've overcome? What would you say to them now if they're listening?
Well, I don't even know, because look what I had to do to get out of that situation. Look what happened to me. I mean, it's not black and white. It's not like there's simple answers, because these are people in lives, they're entwined in these rooted relationships, their parents, their lovers, or their partners. These are relationships that they have to go back to. You've got a magic card that says, right, just give me a brand new life. It comes with people you know, the area you're in. You can't just run away from your problems. You might fix one thing, but then you've got to face it every day. How do you do that?
It's an environmental problem, so it's a big societal change needed.
Yeah, it needs big changes, big.
Coming back to you, Jenny, what can employers do? So we've heard an incredible story of Raina there. She's clearly motivated, she's passionate. You're smiling because this is quite common, isn't it? And what can employers do to be more inclusive and to help out?
We're here at Gifted Women to make it quite easy. We provide a lot of support. So when employers contact us, first of all, we would never set up a woman to fail. So we would never put a woman with an employer where it wasn't a healthy environment, where it wasn't realistic in terms of working patterns or other commitments. So if it's Plymouth employers, I would just say reach out to someone like Gifted Women. You've also got Shekinah, who run an employability service. People like us, charities like us, we're there to be that middleman. You know, where I took a punt in my business and I phoned up Trevi and I was like, do you have any women that want jobs? I was on my own with that. And there were real complexities with that. Whereas now that Gifted Women exists, there's support. If employers need support, pick up the phone. If the woman needs support, we're there. So we're that person in between to just make sure things go as smoothly as possible. And I would just say, take a chance on people. Park your preconceived ideas at the door, really, about anyone, not just women, about anyone and any issues or anything that you might feel far removed from. Because sometimes that's uncomfortable, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is outside of my experience, so I can't do that. I'm not equipped to do that. I think people are people.
Yeah.
And whatever people have experienced, they've got skills to give.
I watch telly and see young kids now, and I think when I'm getting old, I'm like, oh, look at those bloody yobs. Do you know what I mean? I used to say about my own self. I used to be like that.
Yeah.
I was one of them. But now I think it's disgusting. But I understand the story. I know where they're coming from. And I'm not saying that's an excuse. I'm saying when you have to live in that world, you know, it gets hard. These kids, they're just looking for someone to love them, understand them.
Mm-hmm.
But then weakness out there as well gets taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
But I just say, don't judge a book by its cover. Everyone knows that. But I think more money needs to be put into the grassroots charities, things like what we're doing, because they're the ones behind the scenes that actually change people's lives for the better. Like, I didn't think I'd ever do anything like this.
Well, your story is absolutely incredible and motivating and inspirational. You've come a hell of a long way, haven't you?
It's crazy.
And thank you for sharing your story with me. You're talking to a man in a darkened room, you know. With what's happened to you, I'm surprised you haven't lynched me, so I'm sorry.
No, yeah. I've come a long way.
Yeah,
I might throw a cup of tea over you, but
no, that's fine.
No, I'm joking.
I probably deserve it with some of my awkward questioning. Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
What's next for Gifted Women?
We're still really new. We're still in our formative stages. We're still figuring stuff out. We're still figuring out how
it works.
But we've got to figure out how do we fund it sustainably? Because that can't just be charity. I understand as an employer the power that I had. I understand that now more than ever. And I think that businesses are in a position of real power. We can't just leave everything to charities. Whether businesses can offer some financial support, a fundraiser, an event,
training,
something that will bring your team
anything.
Together. Yeah, commission a bit of training, but also maybe offer a woman a work experience placement, very low risk, no cost involved.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, business under a lot of pressure at the moment, cost pressures. So it's a massive risk to employ someone. I mean, we at the Chamber, we've just made a decision not to employ because of cost.
Yeah.
We just don't think we can afford it. But to be able to give someone a chance, you know, we'd happily do that. I think that's really, really powerful. And I'd ask the employers listening to reach out to you. Yeah. And it's great that you want to make it sustainable and you realise it's not about handouts. It's about systemic change. It's about collaboration. It's about making something.
Yeah. These are women that don't want handouts. They want someone to look at them the same way you'd look at Jenny, because she's someone that's worth giving your time up, and that she wants to not to prove to everyone else, just herself as well. She wants to just have some kind of pride and purpose in her life, and it means the world when people give people a chance, because it means that you've put your trust in them, and that is priceless. So it's giving that to a woman. I just really want to say, even giving a chance, a job placement, anything, funding to help. These changing lives, it really is. Yeah.
We're so small that we can do things outside the box. So if an employer didn't want to offer a whole work placement, what about like a skills session or a tour of your workplace? You know, it's just things that raise aspirations and open women's eyes to things that they could do and opportunities that are out there. Because like I spoke about those baby steps, those are all baby steps that actually lead to that really sustainable change. But I think more than anything, what I would just like to see is a redistribution of resources in society, wealth, energy, privilege. And I think that Gifted Women offers people a way to start doing that in a way that's accessible. Like you say, we are all struggling. Yeah. Doesn't have to be about money.
No.
You've changed a lot of lives already, and the stories I heard were absolutely amazing. And I hope people listening to this will be as inspired and will reach out to Gifted Women and offer their support, particularly employers. But for now, Jenny Ajeni and Raina Dunn, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your stories. It was really powerful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Accountants and Business Advisors, acting for over 800 farmers across the Southwest. Westcott's. We're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Presented by Stuart Elford. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.